Hey, everybody, it's Pastor Will. Welcome or welcome back to the Brazos Fellowship Podcast. Thank you for listening today. And at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast if you aren't already. But more importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take the next step in your faith journey. Enjoy.
But this morning, I want to share with you something that I've kind of discovered about myself here recently. And that's this, is that I do everything in my power to give everybody the best possible version of me. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, except that my default mode then is to take all the parts that aren't the best possible version and camouflage those parts or hide those parts or, in many cases, just completely withhold those parts. And I think what we're going to discover this morning is that we all do the same thing. And the problem with that is that those are the majority of the parts of me in my life, in my case. And I try and hide those parts. And the best place, I think, to kind of get a snapshot of what that looks like for me is just scrolling through my Facebook page. And so I kind of creeped on myself a little bit this week through Facebook and found a few posts I want to share with you. Here's one of them. This is from July 28th, 2011. This was our 10-year wedding anniversary. 10 years ago, two words, three letters, the smartest thing I ever said, I do. Aww. Hey, guys, write that down. Like, I'm seeing some of you taking notes like crazy because, see, that's awesome. I mean, that is the best part of me as a husband. And by the way, it's still the smartest thing that I've ever said. So that is incredible. And I am such a great husband, right? What you don't see, though, are all the not-so-Facebook parts of my life in those 10 years. All the times that we struggled to even like each other at times, right? The arguments and the conflicts and all my failures as a husband, and there were and still are a lot of them. Those don't make it to Facebook, do they? Or how about this one? It's a pretty good birthday when your dad builds you your very own real-life workbench. Here's the good part. How blessed we are to have such a thoughtful and talented daddy. See, this is one I was tagged in. Did you know that on Facebook, when somebody tags you, you have the option to put it on your page or not put it on your page? Well, do you think I had to think long about this one before I was like, absolutely, that one's going on there. This is the best part of me. Because here's the thing, is I don't know about your family, but my family is blessed. Because I am thoughtful and I'm talented. This is the best of me. The not-so-Facebook parts of my life, of my dad life that don't get posted are all those times where I get home from work and I'm too tired to play with the kids and I don't want to help with homework, or I just lose it and lose my temper and yell at them for no reason, or I complain about how dirty their room is or how funny they smell or how much they cost me. I mean, all those places where I fail as a dad, those don't make it to Facebook, right? Here's one more. This is a few years back. I came across these notes in my Bible from a sermon I heard last summer at Valley Creek Church. And you can read the notes there if you want to. But here's the point on this one is that I am a super spiritual guy. Like, I have this whole relationship with Jesus thing. I've got it down. And I read my Bible every day. And look at that. I take notes during sermons. Anybody else? I'm watching. Anybody else out there? What doesn't make it to Facebook, though, are probably the other 6 days that week that I probably didn't even think about reading my Bible. Of course, I'm not going to post those times where I have questions about my faith. See, I only want to put out on Facebook the best of me. And as a matter of fact, if you were to take a sum total of all of my Facebook posts and create kind of a profile of me, you know what? I am awesome. I am a really, really impressive guy. Like, I'm always thoughtful to my kids. And I've created for my wife this fairy tale life, right? And I am super productive at work. And I work out every day. And I eat right all the time. And on move-in weekend, when I'm driving down Texas Avenue, I treat everybody else with dignity and respect. Right? I mean, I never feel discouraged or defeated or alone or scared. And I never get confused. I never get hurt. And my wife admires me, and my kids respect me, and my dog never does his business in the house. It's like the perfect life, right? Here's the problem, though, is that that's just my Facebook life. And it's my not-so-Facebook life that really represents the other 99.9% of the real me. See, the truth is that I have this senile old dog named Oscar that poops in the house, like, almost every day. And every time I get mad and stomp through the house, grumbling under my breath, or sometimes out loud, to go clean it up. And the truth is that I'm not very patient in traffic. And the truth is that anytime there's conflict or stress in my life, my default mode is either sarcasm or withdrawal. And I have a hard time apologizing. And the truth is that I get discouraged, and I get insecure a lot. These are the status updates that I would never post because they don't represent the best of me. The truth is that most of my life isn't so Facebook friendly. And guess what? Most of your life isn't so Facebook friendly either, is it? Like, we all have parts of our lives that we don't want to give other people access to. We all have stories we would never share on Facebook. So what are those stories? What are those stories that you would never share on Facebook? Well, listen, here's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to have an opportunity to share those stories. We're just going to go, and we're going to start right here with you, young lady. No. Of course, we wouldn't do that here, not while we're in here sitting in rows, because in here sitting in rows, we don't have relational connections with everybody else in here, do we? But here's the question is, do you have a circle of people that know your not-so-Facebook life? Do you have a circle of people that know your story and that love you despite your story? Do you have a circle of people that are willing to walk with you through your story? Well, in the Old Testament, in the Bible, there's a section or a book called Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesiastes was written by a guy named Solomon. And many consider Solomon to be the wisest man who ever lived. And out of the overflow of his wisdom, Solomon gives us this universal principle about life. And he says this in chapter 4. He says, two people are better off than one. Now, let me just stop right there for a minute. Because, listen, as a card-carrying introvert, and I am, I promise you, this might be the one statement that is my least favorite in the entire Bible. Two people are better off than one. I mean, really? What if the other guy is just, he's always late? What if this girl, what if she talks too much? What if they bring drama into the whole thing? Hey, what if he eats the last brownie? I mean, I'm not convinced. But Solomon goes on and he says this, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. Notice that word, we're going to come back to that. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. I love this because Solomon absolutely redefines success for us. See, when we are relationally connected with other people, success no longer has anything to do with any one person's individual achievements or bank accounts or any of the other standards of success that we usually measure success by or lack of success by. Instead, when we're connected relationally, success for the one who's fallen is to be helped up by somebody who hasn't fallen. And success for the person who hasn't fallen is to help the person who's fallen to get back up. And one person can't experience and have success without the other person. And that's probably a whole other message, but I think it's worth pointing out here because Solomon makes a point to redefine success. And in the middle of this definition, we have this scenario that can't possibly be Facebook friendly because somebody's fallen, right? That's not the best of our life. But Solomon says, no, this is what success is. And we all have these not-so-Facebook moments. We're stumbling in our relationships, our health is failing, we're broke, or we're hurt. Hey, listen to me. In those moments, have you ever reached out for help? In those moments in your life, have you ever reached out for help and nobody was there? So when I was about middle school age, which was a while ago, when I was in middle school, our dryer went out. Our dryer didn't really go out. The knob, there's the knob that you set the timer, and then there's the knob, the button that you push to start the dryer. The push button, it went out. And really, it didn't really go out. It kind of worked, but what happened is when you push the knob in to start the dryer, it would start, but then when you take your hand off, the dryer would stop. So it didn't run unless you were standing there holding the knob in. And that's pretty annoying, right? So, I mean, and it seems like a pretty easy fix. Either call a repairman or just, you know, go get a new dryer. But here's the thing, is that my mom was a single mom with two kids at home and two kids in college. And my mom was finishing up her degree, taking classes full-time and working part-time just to try and make ends meet. And so calling a repairman wasn't exactly an option. And buying a new dryer definitely was not an option. You know what was an option? Me. Standing there, holding the knob in for load after load after load. Not fun. You know what else was an option, though? There were a circle of people that knew my family's story. We were a part of a circle that knew not just the story of a broken dryer, but really for us, it was the story of a broken family. And somebody within that circle reached out to help. And to this day, I don't know if it was everybody or one person, I have no idea. But one day, there was a knock at the door. And we look out the window, and there's a box truck sitting out there on the street in front of our house. And we open the door, and there's two delivery guys standing there. Right beside the delivery guys, there's a brand new dryer. And right behind the brand new dryer, there's a brand new washer. Somebody in our circle reached out when we stumbled and when we fell. And it wasn't just a washer and dryer. I mean, it was a lot of things where they filled in the gaps in our story, where they helped us up when we stumbled and when we fell. And I probably don't even know the half of it. But I can tell you, there was a man in our circle who one Sunday afternoon came over and taught me how to change a flat tire. Doesn't seem like that big a deal, right? Unless, if you know our story, there was nobody else who was a part of our story that was around to help me learn how to change a flat tire. And not too long before this, my family, my mom and the kids, we were driving from Sweetwater, Texas to Abilene, Texas on Interstate 20 and had a blowout in the middle of the night, and we were stranded there because none of us knew how to change a flat tire. And this man said, "I can help," and reached out a hand and pulled us up. There was a couple who was a part of our circle, the Neals, and among so many other things that they did, they provided for my family a place to relax, because see, that wasn't a part of our story. And so on Saturday nights, many Saturday nights when the weather was nice, they would call and invite us to come over, and we would go out on the lake behind their house and go out on the lake, and we would eat Bluebell ice cream. I loved those nights. There were guys that were a part of that circle that taught me what it looks like to love your family and to work hard and to love your church. There were families in that circle that made our family a part of their family. So back in Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, "Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble." I love the New International Version of the Bible. The translation of that says, "But pity anyone who falls and has no one there to help." I mean, imagine my childhood if there had been no one there to help. Imagine I would have gone my whole childhood and never known Bluebell ice cream. That's enough to make you cry right there, isn't it? I might still be holding that knob in on my mom's dryer. Imagine when we stumble and when we fall, if there's nobody there to help. And Solomon says, pity that person who has no one there when they stumble and when they fall. Hey, who in here stumbles? Who in here falls? Who stumbles and falls with their health or with their finances? Who stumbles and falls with their relationships, with their spouse and kids? Who stumbles and falls with their faith? Who stumbles and falls professionally or academically or morally? That's us, isn't it? We do. We all do. We all stumble and fall. These are the parts of our lives that we would say are not so Facebook friendly. These are the parts of our lives that we try to hide. We don't want anybody else to have access to these parts of our lives. But listen, can you imagine stumbling and falling and stumbling and falling and stumbling and falling and nobody being there to help? And I know that some of you don't even have to imagine that, that that's the reality that you're living in right now. But I want you to know that's not the way it's supposed to be. For all of us, that's not the way God designed it to be. We can go all the way back to Genesis and see in the creation account in Genesis 1 and 2, when God is creating all this beautiful world and creation around us. Each day of creation, he ends the day by saying, this was good, and this was good, and this was good. And on day 6, when he creates man, he looks at man, and the one thing in all of creation that's not good, he says this in Genesis chapter 2, it's not good for the man to be alone. He's not talking here about a marriage relationship. He's talking about relational connections for all of us. He says here what Solomon repeats in Ecclesiastes, two people are better off than one. This is why Solomon says that pity the person who falls and has no one to help him up. Because success comes when we help others who have fallen. And success comes for us when we've fallen and somebody helps us. And that's how we're better at life. That's how we learn to be successful. We have relationships with other people that we know and they know us. And we walk through this stuff that maybe isn't so Facebook friendly together. This is why two people are better off than one. This is why life is better connected. It's why we say around here that circles are better than rows. Well, let's fast forward about 1,000 years after the life of Solomon. Jesus is born. And Jesus grows up and as a man. He does life together with a few other guys. And he circles up these 12 guys that are kind of walk through life with him. And these guys were eyewitnesses to Jesus' life and his teachings. And they document Jesus' life and his teachings in these books in the Bible that we have, Matthew and Mark and Luke and John. And as a small groups director, I have to be honest with you. There's some things that have always kind of bothered me about Jesus' teaching. He never explicitly talks about small groups. Man, I wish he had. He never says life is better connected. I wish he had. Instead, what we see in the life of Jesus is he lived this out. I mean, he gets these guys and he literally walks through life with these guys and they travel together and they eat together and they cry together and these guys stumble and fall and he picks them up and helps them up. And they do life together as a circle. And this idea of being in a circle, of being relationally connected with other people in such a way that they know you're not so Facebook life and you know they're not so Facebook life, it was so ingrained in who Jesus was that he just lived it out. And then one of the last things that he teaches his disciples is this in John chapter 13, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So I have kind of a messed up imagination sometimes, and as I'm kind of reading through narratives of the Bible, I always try and picture, what are these guys like thinking? What's the look on their face? And I have to believe that while Jesus is talking to the disciples, these 12 guys who were following him, kind of doing life with him, I have to believe that these guys were kind of looking at each other with a puzzled look like, this isn't new. Jesus, you've been talking about love from the very beginning. I mean, that whole, remember, love God with all your heart? We really like that one. And the love your neighbor as yourself? I mean, that one's okay sometimes. Sometimes it's not. And don't you remember, Jesus, you told us to love your enemy? I really wish you hadn't said that. I don't like that at all. You've been talking about love the whole time. And so I really think it took the disciples some time to kind of process this and come to find out that what Jesus was telling them here, it really was a new command. Because what Jesus is telling them and what he's teaching us is this. He says, guys, we've been in a circle together. We've been walking through this stuff together. I know your Facebook life and I know your not so Facebook life. And you've stumbled and fallen and I've reached out and helped you up and I never stopped loving you. and you talk too much, and you say some really dumb things sometimes, and I never stopped loving you. And you show up late, and you eat the last brownie. I've got a thing with brownies today. It says, sometimes you doubted me. Peter, tonight you're going to deny that you even know me. And I still love you. The new command is this, guys. Circle up and love each other, just like we've circled up and I've loved you. And so that's what they did. After Jesus dies and is resurrected and goes back to heaven to be with his heavenly Father, these guys began to tell others in Jerusalem, and other people began to believe. And so there's this movement of Jesus followers. And what these folks did, and we can read about this in Acts chapter 2, is they met in rows in the temple where they learned from the disciples. And they met in circles in homes where they ate together and where they helped each other and where they learned to love each other. And over the next 60 years, this movement spreads beyond Jerusalem into Asia and Europe. And so Paul and Peter and James, who was Jesus' brother, and John, who was Jesus' best friend, they began to write letters to these groups of people from this movement that began in Jerusalem and all these little churches that are springing up. They began to write letters, and if they had the technology then that we have now, maybe they would have sent an email or created a YouTube channel, but they didn't. So they handwrite letters, and they send them out to these churches, and most of those letters are what make up most of our New Testament, and there's a theme that we see over and over and over again through those letters, and that theme really can be summed up with two words, one another. And so we see phrases like serve one another and encourage one another and pray for one another. And we see things like forgive one another and accept one another, be devoted to one another. As a matter of fact, these one another phrases show up about 60 times in all these letters. I mean, it's over and over and over. And the thing is, most of those one another's, there's this implication, there's been a not so Facebook moment happen. Something like carry one another's burdens. So we know that there's been something happen in somebody's life where they've stumbled, where they've fallen. And the instruction here is to love them by helping them up and carry their burden with them. Or a phrase like forgive one another. And so what's happened, there's been a not so Facebook moment where somebody has offended you. And instead of just being mad at them and holding a grudge against them and kicking them out of the circle, no, love them by forgiving them. Or we see bear with one another. And so there's been something happen where somebody's just been annoying. They took the last brownie. And he says, bear with them, be patient with them, and love them by bearing with them. See, the primary activity of the church was one anothering one another. And if everybody is just sitting in rows, it's hard to do one another's, isn't it? So as the church spread in the first century, they met in rows where they learned, and they met in circles where they loved, and they one anothered each other. And as they did that, their faith grew, and sometimes they got it right, and sometimes they got it wrong. And over the centuries, meeting in rows and meeting in circles has looked different in different times and in different places. And, you know, sometimes we get it right and sometimes we get it wrong. But the one thing that never changes, that stays the same, from the time that Jesus modeled this, from the time that Solomon said two people are better off than one, from the time that God said it's not good for man to be alone, the one thing that has stayed the same is that we all stumble and we all fall and we all need somebody to help pick us back up. Here's our problem, though, is that we all don't have that, do we? We all don't have a circle. And I want to tell you something. If you wait till you need it, you won't have it. It's like retirement. If you don't have it when you need it, it's too late. So if you wait till you stumble and something goes south with your health or with your relationships or with your job, with your kids, if you wait till you stumble and you don't have a circle of people that know your story and can help you back up, well, Solomon would say, pity anyone who falls and has no one there to help. And you might say, well, Sam, isn't that what the church is for? And I want you to hear me very, very clearly. The answer is absolutely yes. That's what the church is for. And the church is lived out in circles, one anothering one another. That's God's design from the very beginning. And so at Brazos Fellowship, we meet here in rows on Sundays, and we love this time together on Sundays. But Brazos Fellowship also meets in circles, in apartments, in houses, in coffee shops, in dorm rooms, all over the Brazos Valley the rest of the week. So what do these circles look like? Well, the frustrating thing, like I said earlier, for me is that there's nowhere in the Bible where it talks about small groups. But what we do see is that two people are better off than one. The success when it comes to being connected relationally happens in life when we're there to help somebody else up and somebody else is there to help us up. And we see this lived out in the life of Jesus, and many of us have experienced it and seen it in our own lives, that when we stumble and when we fall, the best thing that we can have is a circle of people that know our story, that can be there to help. And so the way circles looks here is we have small groups. And these are groups of 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 or 12 or 8. It's 10 or 12 or, yeah, I got the order wrong. Sorry. People that are in a similar stage of life. People that meet together once a week or every other week, whatever the kind of that group, that circle decides is going to work best for them. And they meet together to get to know each other and to study God's word together, and not just to know more about God's word, but to figure out how to really live this stuff out. And they pray together, and in the process, they get to know each other's life, I mean, the real not-so-Facebook life, and they learn to one another, and when they stumble and fall, they're there to help each other up. And sometimes we get it right, and sometimes we don't, but what we know is that we all need a circle of people who know our story and are there to help us, and we're there to help them. And so we're going to keep trying. So that leads us to this. What is your next step today? I want to give a couple of things, and maybe hopefully you'll find yourself like this in these descriptions, and you'll know this is me. This is my next step. So maybe for you, you just need to create some space in your life. You need to create some space in your life to be a part of a circle. If we were to look at your life and your life is like an electrical outlet, there are so many things plugged in, there's not room to plug anything else into your life right now. And I get that. But here's what I know about overloaded outlets is eventually it's going to catch on fire. Eventually you're going to need a circle. And if you don't have it when you need it, or you're not going to have it when you need it. So you need to figure out a way to create space in your life for a circle. For some of you, you've tried the whole small group thing and it just didn't work out. And so your step is try again. Listen, I know we don't always get it right. I've said that already. And we can't promise that every small group is going to be a great experience. But what we can promise is that when you take that step into a group, you have the opportunity to connect with some other people who they are there because they want to connect with some other people too, because we all know that we're going to stumble and we're going to fall. And hopefully within that group, as you do that, you get to know each other. You're there for each other to help each other. And so if that's you, if you've tried the small group thing and it didn't work out, try again and then try again and then try again. It is so worth it. For some of you, your next step might be to step out and say, you know what? It's time for me to lead a small group. I've been in a circle. I've seen how this works. I get it. I know the value of this. And I also know we need to make more space for more people to be in a circle. And listen, a great small group requires a great small group leader. And a great small group leader is just simply somebody who says, my life is not so Facebook perfect, and your life is not so Facebook perfect. Let's figure this thing out together. So maybe that's your next step. Or maybe your next step today is just simply to say, you know what, it's time. I'm going to join a group. I want to tell you how you can do that. We have an event coming up called GroupLink on September the 9th. And for college students, we have a special GroupLink just for you, college GroupLink, that's going to be on September the 16th. And GroupLink is the best time and place to join a small group. And here's what's going to happen at GroupLink. You register online ahead of time. And when you show up, we're going to help you connect with some other people in a similar stage of life who have similar group preferences. And you'll have a chance to get to know those people a little bit and set a time and a place to meet together. And then we'll launch you as a new small group, a new circle. And our hope is that for every group, that there'll be a place where your not-so-Facebook life will be loved and accepted by others. In a place where when you stumble and when you fall, they'll be there to help you up. And when they stumble and they fall, you'll be there to help them up. And ultimately, a place where you will know and experience firsthand that circles really are better than rows. So here's the prayer of commitment that I'm going to ask you to pray with me this morning. Simply this: Jesus, I'm committing right now to take my next step towards community. I choose today to follow you. I'm committing right now to take my next step towards community, whether that's I need to create some space in my life, an hour a week or an hour every other week to circle up with some people, or I need to try it again. It didn't work out last time, but I need to try it again. Or I need to just say, okay, it's time. I'm going to lead one of these groups. I'm going to register for GroupLink. I commit today to take my next step towards community. I choose today to follow you.
Once again, thanks for listening. If you live in the Brazos Valley, we would love for you to engage with us at one of our weekend services. For directions, service times, and information about our fabulous children's and student environments, visit us at BrazosFellowship.com. That's BrazosFellowship.com.